Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Nick Reich, and I am currently a postdoc in the Johns Hopkins Epidemiology Department. This work that I'm going to be presenting today is work that was part of my PhD thesis, which I finished earlier this year in the Johns Hopkins Biostatistics Department. I'll take this moment to mention my collaborators, who are Justin Lessler and Derek Cummings in the Epidemiology Department at Hopkins. I'm working with them in my postdoc now, and Ron Brookmeyer, who is my advisor in the Biostat Department, and he's now at UCLA Biostatistics. Before I go on, I'm supposed to say that none of us have any personal financial relationships or conflicts with any of the work that I'm presenting here. So let's start by talking about the case fatality ratio in the context of H1N1 and the outbreak that occurred at the beginning of 2000, or in the first half of 2009. So this is a graph that we have compiled from publicly available data from the WHO websites, where they were publishing. And sort of as the outbreak was unfolding, they were publishing every few days updates of the new cumulative counts of cases and deaths that had occurred from H1N1. And so what we did is we took this and essentially are graphing over time how a very naive estimate of the case fatality ratio is shown to have changed. So at any given point in time, we're saying what's the cumulative number of deaths that have been reported, and what's the cumulative number of cases that have been reported. And we're just dividing that to get a very crude, what we refer to as the naive estimate of the case fatality ratio. So there are a few couple obvious things that really sort of jump out right away. First, there's this huge spike right in the beginning, and then it kind of settles out to sort of levels out. So let's talk about those two things briefly. This big spike, you know, goes up. So in the beginning, one out of every 10 cases, roughly, is one out of every 10 reported cases is reported to die, and this is clearly not really what's going on. This is sort of a figment of misreporting and the proportion of cases being and deaths sort of changing over time. Furthermore, even though it's settling out to this nice thing, well, it's sort of tempting to say, well, maybe actually, you know, after a while, it looks like about one out of every 100 cases is dying. That would be still a very alarming rate for influenza. That's sort of on the scale of like the 1918-1919 pandemic, not at all on the scale of seasonal influenza, which is more like one out of every 10,000 cases dying, and certainly not on the scale of what people are sort of thinking is sort of become the consensus about the H1N1. So there's clearly some problems with just sort of calculating this naive estimate of the case fatality ratio. From a statistical perspective, we've sort of tried to identify the different challenges that we have in estimating the case fatality ratio from this kind of data. And they all revolve around the data being incomplete. So first of all, not all cases and deaths will be reported. And the reporting rates for cases and deaths are going to be changing over time. And this is what we saw in that previous graph. And then finally, fatal cases may be undercounted, because at the time when you're conducting a survey in real time, somebody may not yet have died. But then a few weeks later, they may go on to, you know, they may survive for a few weeks of the disease and then die. So this is an issue of sort of accounting for that survival. So I think these are the only two equations in here. This is just very simple. Like, what are we talking about the case fatality ratio? When we're talking about the absolute case fatality ratio, we're essentially talking about a conditional probability of death given that you've contracted the disease, or the total number of deaths divided by the total number of cases. And a relative case fatality ratio is just the case fatality ratio in one group divided by the case fatality ratio in a second group. So the motivating questions for all of this work is, under what conditions can we estimate the absolute, or really we focused on the relative case fatality ratio, because we decided very early on that we really didn't have much of a chance at all to estimate the absolute case fatality ratio from this type of data. So the two conditions that we've identified are when reporting rates vary, when we can make certain assumptions about how those reporting rates are varying, we can get good traction on estimating the relative case fatality ratio. And then another condition is when the case fatality ratio is sort of low, or about less than one out of every 10 cases. And that's sort of a little niggly mathematical point, which I'm not going to go into here, but you can ask me about it later if you want. Okay, so what we did, the first thing we did was developed a typology for surveillance systems. And what we did essentially was tried to classify, and this is just sort of an exercise, sort of more of a theoretical exercise, to classify different surveillance models based on how the reporting rates for cases and deaths are changing over time. So, for example, let me describe what a covariate independent surveillance model might look like. That would be if you imagine that you have some covariate of interest. You're interested in comparing the relative case fatality ratio between two groups in a population. It might be two different age groups. It might be men and women. It might be women and pregnant women. You could come up with any covariate set you like. We can imagine that at any given point in time, the reporting rate for cases for those two levels of this covariate are the same, and then for that same point in time, the reporting rate for death is going to be different for the reporting rate for cases, but it's going to be the same for those two levels of the case of that covariate. So for men and women, the reporting rates for cases are going to be the same, and the reporting rates for deaths are going to be the same. These reporting rates can be time varying, they can be changing over time, and there's no relationship between the reporting rates for cases and the reporting rates for deaths. But so this is a fairly restrictive assumption, and it means that we probably can't make this assumption for something like age groups, where we know that school-age children there's sort of a lot of targeted surveillance for school-age children that's not in place for adults. So this assumption is not going to hold, because we could assume that there might be more case reporting for school-age children than for adults. So we've developed three ways to estimate the relative case fatality ratio. One is this naive estimator. This is sort of our straw man. The second is an estimator that adjusts for time-varying reporting rates. And this employs a Poisson model, which we use to adjust for this time-varying in these certain sort of subsets of this overall model space. And then finally, the third method is one that adjust is sort of a further adjustment to the second method here, which all adjusts for this the survival time, where you may not observe people who die for a little bit. So I'm in the brief time that I have here, I'm just going to make a very sort of a simple example to compare the estimates for the relative case fatality ratios for the first and second of these groups. Okay, so here's our very simple example. This is simulated data here. And we have a simulated outbreak in a population. This is like an incident case curve over time. And this is in one population. However, this population has two distinct subgroups. We have group one, which experiences an outbreak early on in the, sort of a few time units before group two. And in group one and group two, they have different case fatality ratios. So in group one, we assume that 3 out of every 1,000 cases die, and in group two, we assume that 1 out of every 1,000 cases die. So the true relative case fatality ratio here is 1/3, and that's what we're going to be trying to estimate. Furthermore, let's impose a little bit of this sort of reporting rate structure. We're assuming that we're in this covariate independent type of model, where the reporting rates are going to be the same at any given time for group one and group two. We're going to assume that we're going to sort of make it simple for deaths. We're going to assume that all deaths are reported for all time. This is not time varying. But for cases, the reporting rate is going to change, and it's going to change halfway through the epidemic, and it's just going to change this once. We're going to essentially have this step function where it's going to either go from a sort of lower reporting rate to a high reporting rate, or it could also go from a high reporting rate to a low reporting rate. While this is a crude model of a surveillance system, we think that it's roughly plausible because we know that in practice, surveillance systems do move from passive to active surveillance. And we saw the CDC halfway through the 2009 epidemic go from active to passive surveillance. They were totally overwhelmed and so forth. So this is crude, but we think it's at least a plausible model. So the question is this naive estimate biased when the case reporting rates vary by time, and how does our estimator that adjusts for time-varying reporting do? Again, the truth here is 1/3. So here's our graph that attempts to answer this question. We are looking at all possible step functions here. I'm just going to step over here for a second to explain what's going on. So let's say we're interested. Remember how I showed there was that step function where you had an early reporting rate and a late reporting rate. So this is essentially every pixel on here represents one of those step functions. So if we're interested in a step function where the early reporting rate was equal to 0.5, we'd locate 0.5 here, and let's say the late reporting rate was equal to 0.5, where essentially case reporting is consistent throughout the whole time, we'd find ourselves at a white pixel, which then corresponds down here to a case, or estimated relative case fatality ratio of between 0.5 and 0.5.
between 0.3 and 0.36. So it's actually, a naive estimator does pretty well when you're in this white band, which means that when the case reporting ratio is actually not really changing that much. But as soon as the case reporting fraction is changing, and there is a dramatic jump one way or another, that naive estimator becomes quite a bit biased. And in fact, in that bottom very dark blue swath, the naive estimator flips the direction and estimates sort of entirely the wrong direction for the relative case fatality ratio. Compare that to our adjusted estimator. This is, usually I'd be embarrassed to show just a graph that's entirely white, but in this case, this is basically showing a big win for our time-adjusted estimator, because it's showing that across all of these different step functions, we've essentially swept away all the bias by making this adjustment. So in summary, we've identified conditions under which the absolute and relative case fatality ratios are estimable, and that's what that typology has enabled us to do. We've proposed a method to estimate the relative case fatality ratio in these certain conditions. Our simulation results have confirmed the utility of these methods, and they've also identified a few limitations. And our methods have suggested that cross-tabulations of surveillance data are vital for estimating the relative case fatality ratio. And just briefly, I want to show you what I mean by this. This is what we mean by a cross-tabulation. We have sort of time going on one axis. This is data from Maryland from 1918. We actually haven't been able to find data from recent surveillance systems to do this. So this is cases and deaths for September, October, November, and December for different counties in Maryland. So it's cross-tabulating time by some covariate. In this case, it's location. But we've actually found it hard to have this kind of, to find this kind of data coming out of surveillance systems now, where it's sort of cross-tabulated by time and a covariate. So this is sort of the last thing that we think is important. Great. Thanks very much for your time and attention.